Hello and welcome to We the People. The past week has been a nightmare for Indians. Everyone seems to know somebody or the other who has contracted the coronavirus. Everyone has a harrowing story about trying to get treatment for themselves or a loved one. There's a shortage of everything, it seems, from beds to vaccines to plasma to even medical oxygen now. If one state is facing a shortage of testing facilities, another is facing a shortage of potentially life-saving drugs. There's even a waiting line for one's last rites. Turn onto social media and everyone is begging for help for basic life-saving drugs. We locked down the country in 2020 to ramp up our health infrastructure. We were told then this was to ramp up our health infrastructure. Where is that infrastructure today? A whole year has gone by and we have not built up our health infrastructure, and today the taxpaying citizen is scrambling for survival on their own. Why is India so underprepared for the second wave, even after knowing how dangerous it has been in other countries? Tonight on We the People, we have no panelists for you. Tonight, we want to hear from you, the people of India. We want to lend you a shoulder to rest on after what has been an emotionally battered week. We've gathered together today, Indians who are bound together by their horrible experiences, trying to save the lives of their most dear ones. Those who have contracted the coronavirus, those who are sharing their stories, because they do not want anyone else to have to endure what they have had to this week. Joining us first from Mumbai, we have Richa Sanwal. She's a media professional. Richa, thank you for your time. You faced an ordeal in procuring what is debatably the most important COVID injection right now. A huge shortage for it, we're told, across the country, remdesivir. What happened with you?
Thank you, Sarah. My mother contracted the coronavirus on April 9th. And after getting help, you know, over WhatsApp from the doctors, she was told that because her oxygen level kept dropping, so we were advised to send her to a hospital. So, you know, that's when my first sort of battle began, when I had to get a bed with an oxygen for my mother in a hospital. And that was just such a challenge. You know, after trying for over 12 hours, you know, talking to millions of people, I finally managed to get a bed for my mom. So that was, you know, the first sort of obstacle that I faced. Shortly after that, after 3-4 days, you know, we got her CT scan reports, and we were told that she needs remdesivir, which is, you know, the drug that you mentioned is probably one of the life-saving injections that is out there for COVID treatment. That was, you know, just a harrowing experience for me emotionally and, you know, mentally, trying to get help for my mom, trying to organize remdesivir. And there is an acute shortage of the drug right now, of the injection.
Sorry to interrupt, Richa, but I want to just understand this. You were recommended this by the hospital. It was not, in many cases, people are saying, look, remdesivir is not needed, don't go in for it. But in your case, the hospital, the doctor recommended this for you, and then you were told, now go and get it on your own.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It was pretty much like that. You know, we were told that, you know, she would need remdesivir in order to get better. And then, you know, that I began my crusade to procure remdesivir. And as everyone on social media has already seen, it's been an uphill battle to get it because there is such an acute shortage for it. I was given multiple helpline numbers. I kept getting passed on to different contacts, but I kept knocking on doors, just hitting dead ends at the end of it.
So, I mean, can I sum up from what I've understood, what you're saying is, I mean, how old are you, Richa, if you don't mind my asking, on national TV?
I'm 32 years old.
So do you believe that a 32-year-old should have to take on the job and the responsibility of having to find a life-saving drug for her own mother?
I mean, I honestly think that the burden, as it was told by the hospital, was on the patient's family to procure the drug. And I personally feel like there should have been an arrangement made either by the hospitals or by the government, whoever is responsible for getting the drugs to the citizens of this country.
so that you could do your job as a daughter to be there for your mother, not physically, of course, but at least for your family, for your father. Richa, thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing your story. And your story really is a painful truth of what we're hearing across India today, where if it's remdesivir in your case, in other cases, it's just a hospital bed that has become a luxury, as it was for Nikita Arya. Nikita, you lost your mother. Richa still has her mother, luckily. You lost your mom. Thank you, despite that, for joining us to tell us your story. You spent some of her last few hours with her, being shunted from hospital to hospital in an ambulance. Nikita, sorry, I think your audio is off. Could you just check your audio line, please? Yeah, we hear you.
Go ahead. Okay. So this was last year in November that we had no much information and education about COVID-19, like we have today, because what was happening was we were needing beds, and back in November again there was shortage of beds post Diwali, if you remember. So we tried everywhere, and we had to take her in ambulance. For 6 hours, she was in the ambulance. We were literally knocking every door, every person, just to get a bed for her. Fortunately, in the last, we did manage to get a bed. But then the hospital treated like, we were not asked for plasma. We were not asked for different sort of treatment, what is required today, what everybody's asking. They need plasma ASAP. My mom was not even given a plasma. My mom was not even given the remdesivir, which is needed today. But I don't know if the line of treatment was right or not right. And because, you can't go to the COVID ICU. So she was on the ventilator, and we lost her in 10 days.
And you could obviously not even say bye, since you weren't even allowed in.
Yeah, it was quite terrible, because I think the stigma of, having your loved ones, especially in ICU, where you can't even contact them, you can't even see what is the line of treatment. But yes, I remember my mom speaking to me the last day. She said, these hospital people are being extremely rude to me. And what hospital had to say was that she was probably, having... being in ICU, she's feeling that way. It's got nothing to do with, we treating her that way.
Hospitals have also been completely overwhelmed. But Nikita, what what I find chilling about what you're telling us is how you've kept saying back in November. It has been a whole year, a year of incompetence, a year of distraction, a lack of scientific temperament, and here's where we are. What do you feel when you hear the stories coming in? Obviously, nothing can bring your mother back, but what do you feel when you see that we've let a whole year go by, we just didn't prepare at all, and we're back to square one?
So I remember in December, I was speaking to some of the group. There was a group which was formed by somebody, COVID and business support. And I kept insisting that, there should be partial lockdowns, if not completely, and we should work on the odd even patterns. We shouldn't work like, everything is opened again, like completely in Delhi. And this shouldn't be how it is going. So I kept on insisting, and I was turned down by every official I spoke to about this, by a lot of people who made fun of me, who thought, work was really important. But today, where have we landed? Who will we work for if we have to survive first to work for someone? So I'm into events industry. I haven't worked for 1.5 years now, right? I'm sitting at home. But I do understand I need to survive first to be able to work. Now, what we've landed, where we've landed is people have not seen in December, January, February, the wave has actually been doubled, tripled, and quadrupled, because A, I feel there were no tests happening. B, I think a lot of people took it very lightly that COVID is gone. And I wouldn't say a particular government, but I think it was responsibility of all the governments. Mm. It was responsibility of every individual to make sure that COVID had not gone. COVID was still there.
Yeah. And I know, I mean, I'm speaking from a position of privilege, but what use is work if, you know, you come home and there's no mom to ask you, how was your day?
Exactly.
Thank you so much.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us. I want to go across to Dr. Mayank Somani, MD and CEO of Apollo Hospitals, Lucknow. Doctor, we're hearing, I mean, Lucknow and UP really has been off the map when it comes to coverage, media coverage. So we don't really know how bad the situation is on the ground. But we hear of doctors, nurses, the frontline staff being completely overwhelmed. We hear stories of doctors whose kids have been asked to stop coming to school because authorities fear that they could be carriers given their parents' profession. As a doctor, has this been an emotionally battering week for you?
See, I think the entire pandemic for doctors, and especially in our setup where we are having overwhelming number of patients here, so what's happening is that it's eventually going to take a toll on everybody's psyche. We see patients dying or people being desperate, asking for oxygen at home. If not, they can't get an admission. See, the entire system is overwhelmed. And if you look at the Indian healthcare system per se, we were always underprepared for our without the pandemic as well. The number of beds per the population was always much lesser than the WHO recommended one. And then we have a pandemic. And see, the number of doctors and nurses which we produce was never enough. So, you know,
but we had a year.
See, to
Dr. Somani,
produce
we
that,
had a
see,
year see, to prepare. We were given a see, year's warning.
Yeah. See, I'll
tell
you, sir.
And we locked down India saying it was so that we could build up our infrastructure.
Of course. See, the idea is to build infrastructure, which we can, and I think we should have. You're absolutely right. But the main thing in a healthcare system is HR. You can't produce nurses and doctors in 1 year, and that's the challenge. So we will continue to face this challenge because the number of patients which we are getting, it's a pandemic, and I think it will be very difficult to prepare for such a pandemic where the number of patients are just, you know, every other patient of ours is turning out to be positive. Even a heart attack who's coming, 50% of them turning out to be positive. So the positivity rate is really high right now. And all the doctors, nurses, staff, they're overwhelmed. They are working overtime. Nobody is letting their guards down. They're still, it's very encouraging to see the kind of response we're getting from staff, but it's almost impossible to cater to everyone. So in an emergency of 20 beds, now I have 50 patients. Everybody is lying in the corridor. Everything is happening. We're still providing oxygen, remdesivir if it's available, but we're getting shortage of all kinds of drugs, oxygen, beds, staff. So it's currently it's a problem.
And in the middle of all of this, sometimes you'll hear patients, like we heard Ankita say that her mother was complaining that the staff was rude, but it could just be a reality of them being overworked, just tired, completely tired.
Yeah, it's very difficult. It's impossible to satisfy patients or patients' relatives. So we have had complaints that, you know, nobody's telling us about our patients. So we have a choice. Either we attend to the patient's complaint and give them medicines and drugs, or attend the patient's attendance and tell them. So it's we have to prioritize. There's the same number of people are working in a 20-bed emergency. 50 patients are there. So either we attend to the patient and carry out the medication, or we stand with the attendants and start talking to them. So we have to prioritize what kind of work is more important at this point of time.
Thank you, doctor. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your service for this entire last year. Well, let's bring in Vandana Mahajan because she actually brings us a different point of view. She was a COVID patient. She was admitted. Vandana, you were admitted to hospital for 6 days. I think you had a COVID pneumonia. But there you're saying your eyes opened up to what the staff, the nurses, the doctors have been enduring for the past year.
Yes, I think I'm going to give an absolutely different perspective to the discussion that's been going on. I'm a mental health professional. So I saw the situation from that perspective, and I put out a tweet which has actually got a tremendous response. It's got about 16,000 likes and it's got about 6,000 retweets. What I saw was the human face of the healthcare professionals. You know, we have made them to be these superhumans who are taking care of overwhelmingly big number of COVID patients. But what I saw was their human face. And I interacted with the nurses, I interacted with the IRs, the housekeeping staff, the residents, and I realized that they are as human as you and I are. They have families to go back to. You know, I was listening to somebody talk about their mother, and I was talking to a 30-year-old who hadn't met her mother for 6 months, a nurse. Mm.
And so, you had also tweeted about how nurses, you know, in their PPE suits, were not drinking water because they were unable to go to the bathroom physically, given they were wrapped up in these huge suits.
Absolutely. I mean, actually, once you're in the COVID ward, you realize you're surrounded by these alien-looking people. They are covered head to toe. They've got glasses and they've got gloves. They've got shoe covers. And when I started talking to them, they said, you know, it's a 6 to 8 hours duty today. But when the pandemic came in, it was at times they did a 12-hour duty. And for 12 hours, not going to the washroom, not eating, and especially for the female healthcare workers, when they're menstruating, they can't even change. So that gave me goose flesh. The wards are overflowing with patients. Oof. And there is limited number of healthcare professionals.
That's Vandana Mahajan, thank you for sharing that side of the story with us. You know, but the ordeal doesn't end there. Everyone is in queue. Even after death, the wait for moksha seems to be getting longer at the ghat. Jitinder Singh Shanti runs an NGO. Jitinder ji, thank you for joining us tonight. Aap logo ko unki antim yatra mein madad karte ho. Aapne is hafte mein kya dekha hai?
बहुत बुरा समय देखा है। 25 साल मुझे शमशान घाट की सेवा करते हो गए, लेकिन ऐसा बुरा मंजर नहीं देखा कि जवान बच्चों की लाशें आ रही हैं। और आज भी मैंने 44 डेड बॉडीज जो कोविड की थी अपने हाथों से जलाई हैं, उसमें सारे 70% से ज़्यादा जवान बच्चे। दिल रो पड़ता है जी देख के, सच बोलूँ मैं आपको कि हम जिस दिल्ली में रह रहे हैं, आज कहीं जा रहे हैं पेशेंट को बेड नहीं मिल रहा है, बेड मिलता है तो उसे ऑक्सीजन नहीं मिल रही है, वेंटिलेटर नहीं मिल रहा है, और तो और जिस छोटे अस्पतालों में डेथ हो रही है वहाँ पे मोर्चरी नहीं है, रात को कहते हैं लाश घर पे ले जाओ कोविड वाली, और जब शमशान घाट आते हैं तो वहाँ भी उनको वेटिंग में बैठना पड़ता है। बहुत बुरा समय है जी, मैंने अपनी जिंदगी में ऐसा गंदा मंजर नहीं देखा जो इस समय चल रहा है।
तो एंड ऑब्वियसली आप दिन में काम करते होंगे, रात में भी काम करते होंगे।
24 घंटे मेरी टीम लगी है, मेरा मैनेजर, मेरा एक ड्राइवर, आज कोविड हो चुके हैं 3 दिन से। लास्ट जब कोविड चला था मेरा एक ड्राइवर उसमें शहीद हो गया था, मैं, मेरा बेटा ज्योत, मनीष, मेरी मिसेज सब पॉजिटिव हो गए थे, लेकिन बच गए थे उस समय। लेकिन आज मुझे लगता है कि हम में से किसी को हुआ तो हम बचेंगे नहीं, क्योंकि पहली बार जब हुआ था लोग 15-20 दिन बाद या तो ठीक हो गए थे या डेथ हुई थी। आज 24 घंटे में डेथ हो रही है, 24 आवर्स में डेथ हो रही है, क्योंकि किसी हॉस्पिटल में ऑक्सीजन नहीं है तो कहीं वेंटिलेटर नहीं है, लोग बहुत तड़फ रहे हैं। आज 500 कॉल आई है मेरे पास, शंटी जी एक वेंटिलेटर दिला दो, शंटी जी एक ऑक्सीजन का सिलेंडर दिला दो, और यहाँ तक कि लाश को भी जल्दी संस्कार करने के लिए सिफारिश आ रही है।
Big difference this time round from a year ago, as Mr. Shanti points out. A year ago, people were recovering. This time round, because of a lack of oxygen, a lack of plasma, a lack of beds, a lack of ambulances, the fatality rate is much higher than it was last time round. Lack of tests too. Riona Basu joins us. She's a student in Delhi. Riona, you live in Delhi. You're away from your parents, and now your brother has gotten symptoms. And you're not able to get a test? Is that what's happening?
Yeah. So I'm currently living with my elder brother in Delhi. So he developed symptoms this week. And so we tried to get tests from private labs. And we started calling them. But we went for a home collection because we thought it was not safe to travel around with his symptoms. But
And you both are alone. He's quarantined in one room. Yeah. You're outside, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So you didn't want to travel with him?
Because I didn't want to travel with him.
Be safe,
yes,
so that you can look after him too.
I don't know how to drive. So it's not safe to take public transport either.
And not safe for the driver either. For him to be driving you, of course.
Yes.
Okay.
So we called up labs, but most of them said that either they were overworked or that they weren't taking samples because of the weekend curfew. And they told us even if they could give us dates like next week, they would take like 48 to 72 hours to get us the test reports.
48 to 72 hours.
Yes.
And there are repercussions of that too. If labs are running at full capacity, if they're swamped, forcing rejection, home collection rejections, results are taking days to come. That also is significant because what it means is that infected people may not be isolating. They may not be reaching out to those they've been in contact with recently because they don't know if they're positive or not. And that will overall jeopardize efforts to contain the outbreak too. Abhishek Bakshi joins us. Abhishek is somebody who's been coordinating plasma donors. And Abhishek, your phone, I'm presuming, has been ringing off the hook.
Yes, absolutely. It's been so I'm not a frontline worker. I'm sitting at the comfort of my home. So I'm fortunate enough to have a privileged existence like that. But I started just hooking up people with because I have a certain reach online. I have a network where I can talk to. I just started connecting people who were looking for plasma and the people who were volunteering for donations. And then I started getting calls for the medicine, remdesivir. And I honestly don't have any contacts in the pharma industry or the distributors, but people assume that maybe if I'm coordinating, I do have. So I've got pleading calls for that, and I'm unable to do a lot of that. I can just ring up everything. This morning, I was arranging a bed for one of the one of friend's father who was in Gurgaon, and I called up almost every hospital in South Delhi, as in Dwarka, Qutub Institutional area and everything, and in Gurgaon, and I could only manage one bed, which was an obscure clinic. It is an IVF center, but they do have oxygen beds.
Abhishek,
and that is the only
service.
Let me ask you a
question. Since you've been working, you speak with people. The government, the authorities say that there's no shortage of beds. What they're saying is that, look, if you want a bed, you have to go to the hospital that we suggest for you. They're saying the problem is that most people want to pick the hospital they go to. Is that, would you agree in your experience?
No, that is absolutely lie. That is absolutely lie. I've not been to a lot of hospitals, but I know from experience of friends and family who've been outside the bigger government hospital like the LNJB.
So if someone calls you for help and you say, look, I know there's a bed available in this hospital, they'll take it. I mean, they're desperate at that point of time. They'll say they'll take anything.
Anything, absolutely. Like I told you, hooked up a friend to a clinic, which is an IVF center, only doubling down as a
all right. Hospital, all right. Well, this is
offer.
The reality of what it it's like in India right now as we fight the coronavirus. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you, our audience, who have joined us virtually on We the People. We aren't a show in our original sense without you. And for all of you watching, the main takeaway is if you can afford it, stay home, stay safe. It is not worth having to endure what all of our guests on the show have had to this past week. Thank you all for joining us. Stay safe. Goodbye.